The views expressed on Skeptically Speaking do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the University of Alberta, the Students' Union, or CJSR.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Skeptically Speaking, the show that asks you to call in and question everything. I'm your host, Desiree Schell. So it's a very special day here. We have with us this evening Randall Monroe of the wonderfully nerdy webcomic XKCD, and we shall visit with him shortly. Also special about today is the fact that it's the last Skeptically Speaking episode of CJSR's annual fundraising campaign, Fund Drive. And for those of you that just recently started listening to our program, CJSR is the lovely community radio station that allows us to use their airwaves. We do the show live on CJSR, and then we make the show the podcast, and then we slap it on iTunes, and other similarly lovely stations add it to their programming. Stations like Citywide LPFM in Madison, Wisconsin, Public Reality Radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Rossland Radio in Rossland, British Columbia, and Freethought Radio Online. So we love all these stations, but CJSR is the station that needs your money now. So throughout the show, I'll be asking you for your contributions, and whether you're listening live or by podcast or on one of the aforementioned other lovely stations, please do donate. To the best of my knowledge, we are the only call-in skeptical talk show, and we couldn't do it without CJSR. So our many happy volunteers are waiting to take your phone pledges and online donations. You can call 780-492-2577 extension 1 if you'd actually like to speak to a human when you donate. Or if you'd like to avoid personal contact altogether, do go to our website at skepticallyspeaking.com and find the online donation link. It's directly below Randall Monroe's picture, creator of XKCD, who will be on the show momentarily. And remember, if you donate online, please do note in the appropriate field that you are doing so in support of Skeptically Speaking. Now, this is really important. You may not realize it, but some people are adamantly opposed to some of the topics that we cover on the show. Topics like vaccinations, genomics, nuclear power, evolution. These are all subjects that some people find controversial, and that means that they desperately need to be discussed using logic and scientific research and skepticism. And you can help keep that going by donating in support of Skeptically Speaking. So thank you to this wonderful list of people. We have Kat, K.O., Terry, Kate, Mark, Gil, Doug, David, Jeff, another David, Dale, Nathan, Rodrigo, Della, Jarrett, Paul, Trevor, Guy, another David, Michelle, Jaime, another Terry, Don, John, and yet another David. Thanks so much, you guys. Your donations really mean a lot. So in addition to the rest of you being eager to give us your money, I'm sure you're excited about the fact that in a few moments, you'll be able to speak personally to Randall Monroe. So of course, I'll let you stew for a while longer and bring on this week's Speaking Up. Speaking Up is, of course, the audience's opportunity to talk about a skeptical or scientific topic of their choice live on air. And this week, we're here with Omar, and I'm going to totally Hello. Get his last name wrong.
You just call me another David if you'd like.
You're a kind man.
Yes, no problem.
It's
Muallem. You say it like no. You're terrified of it.
I am.
It's three vowels in a row, so I can see how it would be so
it's
daunting.
Hard.
Yes.
Thank you.
It is Finnegan, though.
He's actually the associate editor of Avenue Magazine here in Edmonton, who also goes by MCAOK, which stands for Assault of Knowledge.
Yeah, it's true.
Welcome, Omar. So you have an article coming out in the next issue of Avenue that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, it's actually this issue, the October issue, and just hit the stands yesterday. It's an article called Ghostbusters. The idea for the story came from the fact that it's October and every publication in the city and probably the Western world has to do their obligatory ghost story. And so I want to do things a little bit different. And so at Avenue, we decided to debunk a ghost story. So one of the more notorious ghost stories in Edmonton or haunted houses is the Firkins home at Fort Edmonton Park. Now, a lot of homes at a lot of places at Fort Edmonton's Park are apparently haunted. But this one is the most famous because the story was turned into a TV segment on a now defunct show called Creepy Canada. And so now that story and the various sightings about that home have basically overshadowed its importance as a historic home, as a very well-preserved Edwardian building. The story itself, I mean, it really depends on who's telling it. Sometimes there's not even a story. It's just an image of a woman floating by a bookcase. The original homeowner was Dr. Ashley M. Firkins, who was a dentist and an American adventurer. He came here from Chicago with his family. Years later, after all the ghost stories of a little boy playing with a red ball or a teenage boy playing with or reading a book of magic and stuff, apparently now the story is that Dr. Firkins killed his son, locked him in a padded room, killed his son, or his son died of tuberculosis or something, and now he haunts the home. And there's a few ways to debunk it. And one is the fact that Dr. Firkins never actually even had a son.
Seems, how long did you research this story?
It first occurred to me by my girlfriend who works at Fort Edmonton Park. She told me about it. And what I found interesting is what her version of it was quite different from the next person at Fort Edmonton Park who I spoke to about it, which was quite different from the next person. So what it is just there's so many different versions of the story coming in. And and when Creepy Canada came in and took little pieces and decided to give it its own little narrative, that added another element to it. One of the most absurd things about what Creepy Canada added to it was a ventriloquist doll, which haunts the place and materializes in the cupboard or something like that. Completely fabricated. Not true. There is a doll inside the building, which they shot it in. They did actually rent out the place to shoot it in. And it is a creepy doll, yes, indeed. But they decided to, one, turn that doll into a ventriloquist doll, and two,
they are innately creepy.
Yes, absolutely they are.
Let's
yes.
be clear.
They're just so human.
So basically we have a haunting story that with even the most minimal amount of research, people could have disproved.
Yes.
But this has been passed along for years.
Yeah, about when I think the home's been there, the structure's been there since 1992, I believe. And when Fort Edmonton Park took the building off the last owner's homes, they were told, you know, here be ghosts. And then that must have got passed on because when the construction crew was working on it and things like window panes fell out and landed intact, it wasn't translated into an old, creaky home. It was translated into must be the ghosts.
Right. Of course.
Yes.
Because that's logical.
Yes.
Rational, even.
Yes.
Right. So you wrote a skeptical article for a mainstream publication.
Mm-hmm.
Did they print it because you work there? Because that's definitely not a trend we see.
You know, I don't know. I think it was such a funny story. We were laughing about it. I mean, it probably helps that I work there and I'm on staff and so I'm behind the scenes. And we were talking about this home and we were watching Colin, the editor, and I. We're watching the Creepy Canada segment, and it was a riot. I mean, it's just so awful. I mean, the only horrifying thing about it, or about the actors, would probably be their acting. It would probably horrify their acting coaches. It just seemed like something that was worth a good laugh and different, and we wanted to do something different.
Well, do you think if you approached other magazines with the same story that they would have reacted in the same way?
You know, I don't know. I'm not about to speculate on the other publications. The Edmonton Sun, just a few days ago, did run a long story about a haunted hotel in Edmonton and how one of the most esteemed, if I'm getting this right, I think, paranormal investigators came to investigate the hotel in Edmonton. You know, I mean, it's a much easier story, I think. And, you know, upstairs from the studio here, there's posters going on promoting that 78% of Canadians believe in ghosts, so therefore you should come to this talk about from the makers of A&E's Paranormal State, I think, are going to be in the building in the future. I mean, 78% of Canadians believe in ghosts. Great. 50% of Americans believe that man was created by God 10,000 years ago. I'm sure, you know, 79% of people hold in their pee when they shouldn't. It doesn't mean this is, you know, a good idea.
It's an interesting associated stat.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. It's a real fact, too.
When you wrote this, were you encouraged to ghost it up a bit at all?
Nope, not at all.
Not at all.
No, it was completely, it's very hands-off. I'd like to see the copy by here, and I handed it to him. I mean, I did try to get, I did get a conflicting opinion. I talked to Barbara Smith, who is maybe the most famous Canadian author on the paranormal. She wrote all the, you know, ghost stories of Alberta, mm-hmm. more ghost stories of Alberta, and also even more ghost stories of Alberta.
Right.
And she even agreed that Creepy Canada's segments had no dignity, and, you know, she was asked to work with them before, and she refused to. But she does, I mean, she's a firm believer in the ghosts, and she's not as reckless as to correlate the ghost stories with the historical ownership by Dr. Firkins and basically call him a murderer. No, she's not that reckless. But she does tell the stories that people have told her about the homes.
Right. Okay, well, for its being a great source of skeptical journalism, I'd like to give Avenue Magazine the skeptically speaking seal of approval, which I just invented right this Ching! Very second. That was beautiful. And where can people find this article?
It should be online in a couple of days at avenueedmonton.com. As well, if you go to that website and you click, if you're in Edmonton or Greater Edmonton, you click on the link where to find us, you can locate the nearest distributor to you. If you're in the downtown area, it shouldn't be too hard to find it. We're in quite a few coffee shops around the place.
But if you live not in Edmonton, you can find the article online.
Come back to avenueedmonton.com in a couple days, and we'll have the new issue up there for you to read.
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so much
for
being here, Omar.
Thanks.
And remember, folks, you only get this kind of live on-air audience participation on Skeptically Speaking, so please do donate now at 780-492-2577, extension 1, or go to our website at skepticallyspeaking.com and find the link to our online donation page. So on to Randall Munroe. Just in case you haven't been on the internets as much as I have, Randall is the creator of the webcomic XKCD. It's the really funny one with the stick men. It tends to deal with scientific topics, math, velociraptors, famous nerds, and emotional angst. So it's awesome. And Randall, are you on the line?
I am.
Hi, welcome to Skeptically Speaking.
Hi.
It is wonderful to have you with us. Now, audience, you can reach us here in the studio at 780-492-2577, extension 7. You can also ask questions by Skyping us at Skeptically Speaking and by emailing live at skepticallyspeaking.com or by Twitter at Skeptical Radio. So, Randall, what's it like what's it like to be an internet meme?
Oh, I try as hard as I can not to think about it.
Really? You don't revel in this in any sense?
You revel for a little while, and then it just starts to get weird. Because you start thinking, like, everything you say or everything you post anywhere, what if there are 1,000 people reading this and it turns into a thing? So, like, when I go to events and stuff and people come up to do book signings, I try to pretend that each new person who's come up is just someone who ran into me at a party.
So how often do things like that become a thing?
Not really that often. Like, you mean, stuff that I post turns into internet memes?
Mm-hmm.
Not that often. Although when it does, it usually takes it by surprise. The couple of times I've tried to make that happen, it usually doesn't. But then when I put something up as a joke that I think is too crazy for anyone to actually, you know, do or make happen, you know, an idea, they run with it. Like when I made a joke about YouTube and how it would be great if the comments were read back to people before they posted them, so they had to hear how dumb they sounded. And then someone at YouTube actually went and implemented that feature.
You know, you're an inspiration to us all, right there. So when XKCD suddenly got big, do you want to tell us how that happened?
Totally by accident. I was just scanning comics from these old notebooks that I wanted to put online so that, you know, I could link them to some friends. I was really just scanning them to save them, but I had this website I wasn't using, and so I figured, oh, I'll just stick them up in a drawings folder up there. And one of them got linked around to some people, and eventually got linked on a Boing Boing, which is a fairly large blog. And it was so much fun having all these people coming and reading my stuff that I started drawing more. From then on, it just gradually grew.
Okay, now before doing XKCD full-time, you were a consultant for NASA.
Yeah, a contractor. So I was really, you know, I had interned there, and then one of the guys I met there offered me a job in his lab. So I worked there for the better part of a year on robots.
On robots.
It was much less dramatic than it sounds, but yeah, we were building robots that were supposed to be demos for whatever interesting hardware anyone was working on, and they could come and bolt it on our robot, and we could show it off to people who came through. And it turned out I wasn't very good at it. The robot it tended to run into walls and toddlers a little more often than I'm happy with.
Well, I'm glad you found gainful employment elsewhere.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, since you worked for NASA, mm-hmm. I kind of want your opinion of a picture that a listener sent me. For those of you on Twitter, it is posted. It's a photo of someone holding a sign that says, "Save our moon from October 9 NASA bomb." So thoughts on that, Randall?
I come down firmly on the blowing up the moon side.
Really? That's your official platform?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think that Saturn and, let's see, there's I think that all the gas giants get to have rings, but none of the terrestrial planets do. So I'm definitely in favor of blowing the moon into as many tiny pieces as possible so we can finally have some rings.
Wow. You're a bit harsh.
I mean, it's not like anyone's using it.
I'm just going to go with that. Good. So are you familiar with the skeptical community?
Somewhat. I actually wasn't sure. I didn't really realize until recently that there was a skeptical community. And at this point, I'm still skeptical. I'm really excited to sort of find out that this group exists and happy to see what they're doing. But I really haven't had that many run-ins with it.
That's interesting because there's a lot of overlap between mm-hmm. Between our communities, between the science community and the skeptical community.
And I first learned about the skeptical community through like XKCD stuff. People said, "Oh, you were drawing XKCD, you'd be interested in this," and you know, linking me over to some of your areas.
Yeah, and quite honestly, we all post your comics everywhere. I was going to say post them religiously, and that's funny. Because we are very familiar with your work, and would you consider yourself a skeptic? I'm sort of recruiting, I think. I don't know why I'm putting it like that.
Sure, I suppose. I should mention before we go any further that you may be able to hear or not, but I seem to have come down with a pretty serious cold in the last couple of days, so I've been coughing and sneezing a lot. Fortunately, I've been well supplied with all kinds of cough medicines and cold medicines containing some interesting ingredients.
Oh, like what?
So, well, there's one of the cough medicines with codeine, and then there's the Sudafed that I understand if I didn't want to take it as a cold medicine, I could make into crystal meth. Anyway, so on the subject of my skepticism, if I start to see apparitions floating around the room during this interview, I'm glad that I have the cold medicine as an explanation, because otherwise I wouldn't know what to tell you guys.
Brilliant. In these cold medicines, is there any echinacea by any chance?
There is not.
No ginseng.
I just took a look at the active ingredients on all of the cold medicines that were for sale and then went to look and see which ones did anything. And it's interesting, as far as cough medicines go, there was a study recently that showed most of the major ingredients in cough medicines were indistinguishable from placebos or from the control groups in trials in actually preventing coughing, which is part of why I was excited to get the one with codeine in it, because that's supposed to actually work. But yeah, no, I actually took the approach of, instead of like picking one and, you know, I like this brand, I like NyQuil, I like whatever, I tried to look at what were the ingredients in each one and then just buy those ingredients individually and mix them as, you know, to see which ones actually seem to work.
How's that working for you?
So far, it's pretty good. We'll see, again, about the apparitions floating around the room. But
you know, that's interesting, because you've said before that you have the opinion that you should only do dangerous things when they're really cool. Does this fall into that category?
Sounds like something I'd say. No, I'm not doing anything dangerous here. These are all. You know, fairly bland medications. It just sounds a lot more dramatic when you start saying, "Oh yes, I'm taking I took a few doses of pseudoephedrine earlier, and then and then acetaminophen, and really, you know, Sudafed and Tylenol." But it makes it sound like you're doing something much more dangerous when you just are actually buying them by drug name.
Audience, if you would like to speak to Randall Monroe about cough medicine, please do call 780-492 2577 extension 7. You can also ask questions by Skyping us at Skeptically Speaking, or emailing us at live@skepticallyspeaking.com, or by Twitter at Skeptical Radio. And I think what I'm trying to say is you have no excuse to not be talking to us right now. All right, so have you heard, sticking with the skepticism for a while, have you heard that the 9/11 Truth Movement has been using your comic to promote their conspiracy theory?
I had not heard that. Which comic is this?
Actually, the one they're using is the single panel of the official story of 9/11 is full of holes one.
Wait a minute. Which one? Not to admit to not knowing my own comic too well, but
this is awesome.
This is sounding like one that I know I didn't end up running.
Okay, you know what? What we're going to do is, are you on Twitter right now? Go to @skepticalradio on Twitter, and we're going to post the picture that they're using. Yeah, because they're only using one panel of your comic.
Oh.
Not the part pointing out the crazy.
Okay. I thought you said it was a one panel comic.
Oh, no. Sorry, just the one panel of that comic.
Okay.
So anybody else that wants to look, you can check it out as well. So, you know, what do you think of that? Are you bothered by that?
Not really. People are gonna say all kinds of things, and I try not to get too up in the arms about someone being wrong on the internet. I'm sure that
I hear there's a comic about that.
Yeah, I sort of drew the comic about not getting too angry about people being wrong on the internet to stop myself from typing angrily all the time. No, I think that the comic probably did a lot more good than bad in pointing out some things that had frustrated me about talking to conspiracy theorists.
So what most bothers you about talking to conspiracy theorists?
I think that there's just a kind of I don't know if it's, you know, cognitive dissonance or what, but this this confirmation bias raised to an extreme level, where I think what bothers me is that there is no correlation, or, you know, reverse correlation between how crazy a theory is, or like how unlikely it is, you know, how tenuous the evidence is, and how firmly the people who really believe in it believe in it. And I'll talk to people who seem pretty reasonable, and, you know, they'll say something like, I think there are some, you know, issues with the theory of evolution, and, you know, maybe it didn't all happen like this, which is a, you know, fairly reasonable position to take as far as crazy conspiracies go.
Yep.
And then the people who say that the Earth is 6,000 years old, and I'll hear both of those from people who are sort of similarly well-educated and otherwise fairly intelligent. And they just seem like they're, you know, one of them is so wildly out there. And then you go further and further into like the lizard people domain of
Raelians. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And still the people you talk to often come across as pretty rational and reasonable.
It's interesting.
It's just weird. It seems like there's something else going on here than, you know, normal logic and psychology. And that kind of bugs me, trying to point that out to people who I otherwise feel like are pretty smart.
I'm just going to point out to everybody, there are a lot of questions that were submitted through the website. Ryan's giving me the holy crap look that I generally take to mean that there are a lot of email questions as well. So we'll read out as many of the best ones as we can.
All right.
All right. Are you as antisocial as your comics make you seem?
I have been holed up in my room for about 48 hours. I really like doing events and meeting people, but I'm an introvert in the sense that that really exhausts me. And so after, you know, so I'll go out and spend time, you know, doing stuff, meeting people, and then I have to go back to my room and hide there for a little while. And so it's a little bit of both.
We actually have a phone call.
Okay.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. Who's this?
Hi. It's Kat.
Hello, Kat.
Hi.
Hi, Kat.
I'm loving the show. It's absolutely wonderful. You're making me laugh like crazy. I'm so glad I pledged. Randall's got a huge fan base with everyone I know, and I was just wondering, this question is actually for Dez. Have you told him about your tattoo?
Shush.
I'm in so much trouble now. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I love that we're on video right now. Oh, Kat.
You're going to beat me up so much, aren't you?
You know, I would just like to point out that this is why I have an editor. It's totally fine. Cut Kat off. Bye, Kat.
Bye.
Bye. Ah, live radio. You gotta love it. All right, we have more website stuff. Actually, what you were going to say, I asked you about the people tending to do the stuff that you do in your comics.
So we're not going to get to see your tattoo.
Oh my god. Okay, this is a special Fun Drive episode. No, you're not going to see it. Okay, let's do it this way. I'm going to try and make this a fundraiser. If you're still not going to see it, but I'll tell you where it is. Mm-hmm. If I hear 5 phone calls in the next 5 minutes, I hear nothing. Notice I'm not giving out the number. Okay, it's 780-492-2577, extension 1. And we will talk about where I have an XKCD-related tattoo.
You're not the one who emailed me with the...
What? No, no, there was no emailing. No emailing at all occurred.
Because I actually know of one person with an XKCD-themed tattoo. And I was sort of... she sent me some pictures of it, and they were sort of blurry and partly covered up. And I was torn between asking her for better pictures of it and not, because if I asked her, it felt kind of inappropriate to ask for a sharper picture. But at the same time, I felt like in a way I had already been there, so...
Oh, my.
Anyway.
What was the tattoo?
It was the door opening up and the playpen balls spilling out.
That was not me.
Okay.
I was just thinking, who caught me while I was asleep? No, it was absolutely not me. Okay, I don't know how to segue from that. How many phone calls was that, you guys? Was that 2? You have 5 minutes, people. That's it. That's all I'm giving you. Okay, so segue. If anyone else has a question for Randall that's not about my tattoo, give us a call at 780-492-2577, extension 7. And that's 7 to talk to Randall, extension 1 to talk to the people who are waiting patiently for your credit card number. So, Randall, you did a Google Talk a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that was actually the first time I had ever seen what you look like as a human, not as a stick man. So I appreciate you doing
that. Yeah, the internet is strange.
Yeah, really. I had no idea.
Of course, for the longest time, I didn't know what Garrison Keillor looked like, for example. And I always imagined people look vaguely like my neighbors. But
that's a good call. It's approximate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the limbs and such?
There are all kinds of... It was really interesting for me to see Don LaFontaine on video for the first time, who's the movie trailer guy. And he does, you know, all of those In World trailers. And it was really strange to see an actual person using that voice.
Oh, odd. Okay.
But you were saying...
Distraction. Right, Rubik's Cube. You did an experiment. And I just want you to explain that, because I howled when I saw that. I thought it was brilliant.
That was totally not planned. I did not know that. So what happened is that a few nights before, I was in California visiting some friends. The Google Talk was actually sort of unplanned. Someone just offered to show me around. And when I called them up, you know, they said, saying I would be around for the next few days, they offered to have me come and give a talk. But the main reason I was there was visiting friends and hanging out. And at one point there was a birthday party for one of the friends, and there was some drinking. And I decided to do this experiment I had always wanted to do, which was to see how my time on a Rubik's Cube changed the more drinks I had. So we mixed, you know, 4 or 5 standard drinks we were going to use. And then in, I think, you know, half-hour intervals, I would solve the cube, record the time, and then take one of the drinks, and then wait for a period, solve the cube, record the time, take another drink, and repeat it. And we found that my time got worse and worse, and then plateaued around double the original time, and then stayed there the more I had to drink. And then when I gave the talk at Google a couple of days, you know, I think it might have even been the next day, so I was still a little bit fuzzy. It turns out the girl whose birthday it was, who had come along to the talk, secretly gave them the graphs that we had made. So as I was talking, I started to explain that I'd done this experiment, and then they started throwing the data up, which I had not seen sober, up on the board behind me. So that was a little bit of a surprise.
Have you posted this anywhere?
I don't think so. And I do remember the data got a little bit incomplete because there was another girl. The data was a little bit bad because there was another girl there who had had, I think, a little bit more to drink than I had and had decided to do, you know, impromptu lap dances. And we ended up having two independent variables there. There were the trials where that girl was trying her best to interfere with the Rubik's Cube solving and then the drinking, and it, unentangling those two variables can be difficult.
That is not controlled, my friend.
No. So of course I haven't, you know, tried to post the data anywhere because it's obviously been tampered with.
That's fair. Good. I was wondering. That was my whole question. I wanted to see those results. Oh, shut up! Oh, we've had 5 calls!
Oh. Wait, what do we get for 10 calls? You have that Twitter where you're posting pictures, right?
I wonder what...
You're on video, aren't you?
This is awkward. Okay.
Oh, it's all right.
No, I promised I would. I am a woman of my word. I will tell you all right here. Ooh, I'm on video. So I have a stick man on my bum. That's...
Aww.
Yeah. That's,
does he have a hat or not?
You know what? I'm not going with the hat.
Okay, because I can see that.
Thank you. And now I'm not going to talk about this anymore because we have a call from Katie from Florida.
Hello?
Hi, Katie. Are you there?
Hi, yes, I am. I have a quick question for Randall. It's about, he recently signed an autograph or a book for a robot. I want to know the deal behind that.
I was doing a book signing that was also a fundraiser for Room to Read at a building that was also down in Silicon Valley, that's also the headquarters for AnyBots, which is a company that makes these robots. And so there were a bunch of robots wandering around, and I was... And, you know, I got to play with them a little bit before the talk. And then when I was sitting at the table later on doing signing, there was a big line. And then I sort of see, you know, commotion as someone pushes through the crowd. And this 6-foot robot, you know, rolls through holding a book. So I signed it and then handed it back to it. And I offered to hand it back the pen. And that it was actually holding a pen in its other hand. You know, it was very dexterous. Now,
right.
I believe this robot was controlled by someone in a VR suit somewhere else, in the building. But it had good dexterous hands, and it handed me a book and then handed me the pen. And I think at one point we shook hands. So
wow.
That was apparently the kind of thing that happens in Silicon Valley. It also suggests that maybe when Skynet finally appears, maybe they're going to take me onto their side. So,
sweet.
Thank you, Katie. That was a wonderful question. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Okay. I realized that I was distracted by a lot of conversation. And so I forgot to announce that we also have 3 lovely prizes for giveaway. If you donate to the show, or so as not to anger the federal charity regulator people, come down to the station and enter, your name will be put into the draw bucket of sciency awesomeness. We have a plush stuffed white blood cell, which is like a teddy bear, but way cooler. We also have a potato clock, in which you take 2 potatoes and you make a clock. Science rules. And we also have another Jill Powell original. Last week, we gave away a drawing that Jill had done of Brian Mallow and myself. And he was juggling an amoeba, a microscope, Saturn, and Pi. And for some reason, Brian's description of this made me practically hysterical. So if you want to hear me sound like an idiot, download last week's show. And so Jill's drawn something for this week, and you have to see this. It is, again, posted on Twitter. You can go to our Twitter stream at Skeptical Radio and check that out. So if you want to have a chance to win that, donate now. Again, that number is 780-492-2577, extension 1, or online by going to skepticallyspeaking.com and clicking the link. And of course, you can...
Looking at that drawing, it looks pretty accurate to me.
You think so?
Yeah, except that I actually, I'm at a desk, not a whiteboard, since my arm would get tired from drawing on a whiteboard all day. But other than that, that's exactly how it looks.
Perfect. I am
proportions
glad.
Are right and everything. My legs are exactly that long. My arm joints at one spot partway down. Head is fairly round.
I will.
Wonderful likeness.
I will pass on that is accurate. Good. Yay. Now, you were supposed to take part in the Improbable Research Nobel Prizes.
Yeah.
And you're very sick, so you couldn't go.
Yeah, I couldn't go. They wanted me to come and wear a mask and, you know, to avoid, because what I was going to be doing was really just sort of, you know, more working on the stage and helping shuffle people around, not anything too connected to XKCD. I was just volunteering. And they wanted me to get a mask and everything so I didn't sneeze on any of the elderly actual Nobel laureates. But I ended up just feeling too under the weather to do the rehearsals and everything, so I had to pull out, unfortunately.
That's really sad, because that sounds like a huge event.
Yeah, I got to go last year, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, can you give an idea of what sort of the organization does, because I love the concept of research that makes people laugh and then think.
Yeah, the Ig Nobel Prizes are given to, like you just said, and also to research that cannot or should not be replicated, which I think is the motto of the Annals of Improbable Research. But the prizes are a ceremony for that year for people who have done interesting, very unusual research, or sometimes given a little bit satirically. And then it's a pretty neat ceremony with a little bit of a Rocky Horror vibe, where there are lots of little traditions and things like that.
Oh, I love that. Is that invite only?
No, I think there are tickets available. I got them last year through whatever normal channels.
Okay, because that actually is going to be on my to-do list. And I just want to give people some examples of some of the prizes from last year, because for some reason, as soon as I heard about this, I thought of XKCD. And I don't know why that is exactly, but it definitely falls into the same category for me. In 2008, the Medicine Prize went to someone for demonstrating that the high-priced fake medicine is more effective than low-priced fake medicine, which is lovely. The Nutrition Prize went to someone for electronically modifying the sound of a potato chip to make the person chewing the chip believe it to be crisper and fresher than it really is. I really approve of this. And from what I hear, and I just checked the website briefly today, this year's winner in one of the categories was a gas mask bra.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that, my friend, is the most useful thing I've ever heard of.
Oh, yeah, it was a bra that could be converted into a pair of gas masks.
Ooh, a pair, even.
I assume, separating them. I haven't gotten to see them. But yeah, that was the public health award, so that the wearer could put on one, and then the other one could be given to a needy bystander. And I'm sure they have a little warning that says, make sure to secure your own face bra before securing those of any passengers.
That's beautiful. Okay, this was submitted on the website, and I don't know if you're into this, but I love this question, so I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
What is your all-time favorite XKCD comic or series of comics? Could you do a dramatic reading of that comic, please?
Oh, I'm tempted to pick one of the one of the ones like the Blago Fractal, where it's just text cascading down to the smallest you can see. I like those ones because we had this little service online where you can transcribe the comics and people can search them. And that one always confuses the hell out of people trying to do a transcription in a text file.
Oh, you're mean.
No, it's all in good fun. Like with the book sales, some of the profits from the XKCD book went to fund building a school in Lao that with the charity Room to Read, and they had to convince us not to name it the XKCD school just to wreak havoc on the kids trying to learn English phonetics.
That's brilliant. Are you trying to avoid the dramatic reading part?
No, let's see. I think there's a very early comic that, and I just liked the opening lines. I just feel.
Did we totally just lose Randall again? We did. All right, Randall, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Great. Somehow my microphone got muted. There must be a hotkey I didn't know about that I hit while I was trying to load up a comic.
I'm going to let you... Well, do you actually have a dramatic reading for us?
Well, the three lines here that I feel like really sum things up I just feel like somewhere out there is the girl for me. Someone loving and caring. A girl whose only mode of transportation is the MC Hammer slide.
That is the best one.
I think that's still very true.
And it was very dramatic. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, I have here in the booth with me, Matt.
Hello.
Hi, Matt.
Now, Matt has something to tell you.
Okay, I don't want to be too obsequious here, but I'm a PhD student in pure math, and I'm a huge fan. And I would also like to say that my favorite Ig Nobel Award winner is the first documented case of homosexual necrophilia in Mallards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my personal favorite.
But, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah. And my favorite comic is the one about the nightmare that you're back in school, and you're having this dream that, you know, you have an essay due or something, and it's the due date of the essay, and I have this dream every week. I'm still an undergrad, and it's always an English elective or something, and I want to know, does that dream go away when you enter the real world?
So wait, you're having that dream, but you are actually in school.
Well, I'm a PhD student, and the dream, I'm always an undergrad. I'm in like my third year. I'm not going to graduate. I'll never make it to grad school.
So for a moment, you're happy.
No, it's terrible.
Oh, no, don't lie. I know grad students. It's not a happy life. The dream does not go away. It's reduced in frequency, but I got letters from people in their 50s who say that they still occasionally have that dream.
Oh, wow. That's terrible.
So I think it reduces in frequency, although it doesn't really change in content.
Okay. I suppose once I'm a doctor, I'll just dream that I'll never complete my thesis, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I just let Matt come in because he only took this volunteer shift to answer phones because you were going to be on the air.
This is the only reason I signed up for this. This is an honor. That is all.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Matt. All right. Now, I know we have some email questions. Go ahead, Ryan.
Okay, the question is, what is the pickiest correction you've ever gotten about the science presented in a strip?
That's tricky because it's rare that someone writes in with something sort of a pedantic correction where I am not already more pedantic than them. I feel like sometimes I obsess about a little detail in the comic, and then I'm sort of sad if no one writes in to try to discuss it. But I think that the best one I got was when I did a comic where I made a mistake. It was about Richard Stallman, and the title of the comic was Open Source, and I had him using the phrase open source in the comic. Now, moments after it went up, I got a ton of emails about people saying, you know, that the Richard Stallman hates the term open source. He identifies himself with the free software community, and he thinks that's the wrong name. And they said that he would never use that term like you have him doing the comic. And I got, you know, a dozen emails in 15 minutes. So really quick, I went and edited it, and I couldn't change the title of the comic, but I moved it so that the bad guys in the comic say open source and Richard Stallman says free software. And after that, I didn't get any more emails complaining about anything, except one email complaining that open source was still in the title.
Oh my God.
That the other character was using the name open source, and that surely Stallman would correct him on that. And then I looked and found that email was actually from Richard Stallman.
Are you serious?
Yes. And
how surreal is that?
It was a little bit surreal. And I didn't correct the comic because it's in databases and RSS feeds and stuff, and I can't really change the title. He wanted me to put an addendum at the end of the comic explaining the actual use of the term open source and to start using GNU/Linux instead of Linux and so forth. And I had to sort of say that if I were going to start putting addendums explaining or correcting details or misconceptions in my jokes, then every comic would have like a 20-page afterword where I tried to say all of the things that I might have gotten wrong, and that would pretty much destroy any punchlines. But it was really cool to hear from him and email with him.
I would assume. So if you in our non-studio audience have a question for Randall, do give us a call at 780-492-2577, extension 7. And that's extension 7 for Randall, extension 1 for the volunteers like Matt, who are only here to listen to Randall talk and take your money.
Well, does he at least get to see your tattoo?
No one gets to see my tattoo, friend. Oh, God, I'm blushing in the booth. Anyway, okay. Also, right, you're really good at derailing me, Randall.
Really. Oh, I'm even better at derailing myself. I don't remember what we were talking about, you know, 5-10 seconds ago. Although that might be the cold medicine.
I'm just going to say, I know we have more emails. Ryan, would you like to go to an email?
Okay. Who are the scientists or inventors that you most admire?
I'm going to avoid stepping into the Tesla versus Edison thing because I know a lot of people have very strong opinions about that one. But I do think, I think that Richard Feynman is sort of an idol to all physicists, or at least, you know, the way he had... very clearly thinking about math and about physics, and he wrote a lot of very interesting books. And actually, just a couple of days ago, I was reading his Tips on Physics, which was a series of lectures that were packaged accompanying the Feynman lectures on physics. And what I really liked was reading. There was a part where he put together a problem, and he was explaining how to solve this particular problem involving levers. And it was an easy, you know, undergraduate problem. And he mentioned that. He made it seem easy, but at home, while trying to solve this problem, he had actually gone through it 4 times and gotten.
And Randall is gone again. You know what? Sometimes I love Skype because it allows me to speak to amazing people for free also. Hello, Randall.
Hey.
You know... Is there...
Sorry.
No. I'm gonna blame the quality of our studio. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because it could raise us more money.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Clearly, they need all kinds of new equipment.
Many, many new shiny things. That's... Yes. Because I don't actually know how to run anything here. I don't touch the buttons. All I do is talk.
Yes, a new retro encabulator with spurving bearings and, you know... So I don't remember where I was. I don't know where exactly I was cut off while I was rambling about Feynman. But the main point was that I had read where he was explaining this very simple problem, and then he said that when he worked through this problem before class, so that he could give it, he actually did it wrong 3 or 4 times in a row. He had to work through the problem 4 times before he was sure he had the right answer, and that was really heartening because this is, you know, a giant of physics and, you know, one of the keenest mathematical and physical minds of his century, and he was having trouble remembering where the positive and negative signs went the same way I do. And I thought that was really, really neat to hear and sort of really encouraging.
We have a Twitter message from Jill. She asks, Randall, do you find you have a large female audience, and have you ever been asked if someone could have your math babies?
So I've had some strange offers and proposals via email. Some of the baby having stuff coming from people who I don't think biologically are equipped to have my babies or for me to have their babies or whatever it is exactly they have in mind. I think that I have the audience splits by gender, sort of like the science community does, probably a little bit more male, but not ridiculously so.
I would like to point out that the concept of have your math babies, I may actually get put on a t-shirt. Because that's brilliant.
Yeah, at this point, I'm not even sure what to make of that phrase.
Oh, okay, Ryan, next email.
Okay, next email. What about science concepts? Do you ever stay away from something because you'd be worried about explaining it in such a compact medium?
I don't think so, because I can always just massively distort things. A lot of the time I'll do a comic and people assume that I'm an expert on the subject, when in reality I've just read the first paragraph of the Wikipedia article about it. And, you know, I get far enough to where I have this joke in my head and then I write it and then I'll get letters saying, you know, you actually sort of, you had that all wrong. And no, what I do have to worry about is when I realize that I've written 8 or 10 panels that's just me having opinions and I haven't really gotten to the joke or the subject. That's where it's really hard to keep myself concise and on topic, is when I feel like I'm getting too preachy.
Now, I'm going to go back to one of the website questions for a moment. Mm-hmm. What field of science do you see as the most exciting for the near future? Which breakthrough do you want to see happen the most?
Probably brain-machine interfaces. I think that there's a lot of stuff there where there's no, you know, sort of unsolvable seemingly unsolvable engineering hurdle. It's just a matter of making it, you know, of getting all the stuff together and integrating it. So the day when we can, you know, move a mouse by looking at the screen, I think is, you know, using a little hat you put on or something. And a lot of other sort of VR type stuff, I think, is in the very near future. And it's going to be really exciting when we start having programs interact with signals from the brain and learn, you know, dynamically. I'm also really excited about some of the space stuff that I feel like there was a lot of excitement about going to the moon and, you know, going into space back in the early part of the 20th century. And then when we actually got to the moon, it was really crazy. But then it's been hard to find things to keep us there and to keep us, you know, going back to Mars. But I feel like that's maybe given us a sense of, okay, everything out there is a barren, desolate rock, and there's no point in looking any further. And I think that attitude is a little bit misguided, and I'm really excited about some of these things, missions, you know, maybe having more missions to Jupiter and Saturn's moons to get better pictures of what's there, and things like the Kepler mission, where they're looking for planets around other stars. Because I think the lesson of the recent past in astronomy has been that everywhere where we have developed the ability to look for planets, we've found them. Which suggests that there are, like, our most, you know, wild estimates about how many other solar systems there were in the galaxy and how many potentially habitable planets were probably way low. So I'm very excited about seeing things like the results from the Kepler mission that we just sent up, which might find some more of those planets.
So is this so exciting to you that if you had the opportunity to work on projects like this, would you maybe change your mind from working on XKCD full-time?
Oh, I just want to reap the benefits. I'm one of those, the destination is much more important than the journey, people. I had this idea that and I don't know if this ended up, this is somewhere in my sketchbook, but it's I was looking at all of these cool things that were going to happen in the future, and oh man, I just want to skip forward 10 years to see these technologies that we're just seeing little bits of now, to see how they become full grown. And so there was this strip about a guy who finally invented cryogenic freezing, to where you could go into suspended animation. And this guy's like, oh great, I'm gonna just put myself in suspended animation for 10 years. And then he wakes up 10 years later, says, all right, I want to check out all this new stuff. And the person greeting him at the front of the capsule, after saying, welcome to the world of tomorrow, says, actually, there have been no new inventions since 2009. What was that? Well, the thing is, all of the engineers went into suspended animation to see the future, and there's been no one here to invent it.
That's sad.
Yeah, and so the guy, of course, immediately says, oh, okay, well, and all the other engineers are waking up now? All right, I'm going back to sleep, and I'm, you know, now that they're going to get to work. And then from off panel, you see other voices, yeah, me too, I'm doing that too. So, but no, I totally want to jump ahead and see what happens and play with the cool toys we're going to have in the future.
I have in front of me a little draw, what did I call it? The draw bucket of sciencey awesomeness, I believe.
Can't go wrong with a name like that.
Thank you. I'm going to draw for the three draw prizes, because of course it's almost the end of the show. Okay. For the stuffed white blood cell, which is super plush. David E. Thank you, David E.
Congratulations.
For the, what's the next one? Ooh, the potato clock. The potato clock is John O. And the grand prize, the Jill Powell original. Oh, and by the way, Randall, we're going to send you the original.
Oh.
So I'll talk to you about that later.
Well, thank you.
Now, that prize goes to... I'm going to mix these up very, very well. Is that only one? It is Terry A. Thank you, Terry A. You are the proud recipient of awesomeness.
Well, congratulations, Terry.
You know what? It's actually 7 o'clock on the dot, but I'm going to ask you one more question. Please answer briefly, and everyone hates this question, but... when you're walking down the street, after you've just done something really cool, and you have that kind of swagger, What song is going through your head? Like, what's your soundtrack during that moment?
Oh, I actually never get to hear more than one or two bars, because anytime I start to think, oh man, I'm so cool, is right when I like plow into a sign or a tree. I think that there's a particular tune, Battle Without Honor or Humanity, that is the perfect music for walking down any sort of a surface. But it's the music that other people will know as the Kill Bill music, that's playing as the Lucy Liu character is striding down the hallway in slow motion. So I think that if you're going to stride along looking cool to any kind of music, that's the perfect music to do it to.
Randall Monroe, you have been wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And thanks everybody who donated to the show. I appreciate it as well. Everybody who's listening, we're never speaking of the tattoo again. Don't even bother.
Oh, I think you're going to get some more questions about
yeah,
that tattoo. I'm sorry.
Great. Thanks, Randall. And everyone else, visit our website at skepticallyspeaking.com to find the link to our Facebook group, our Twitter stream, and to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also download the podcast version of this show by Sunday at noon Mountain Time. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next week on Skeptically Speaking.
Next week on Skeptically Speaking, we'll be talking about skepticism in Canada. Our panel will include Steve Toms from Ontario's Niagara region, Jonathan Abrams from Ottawa, and Jesse Birtle from Vancouver. We'll talk a little bit about how the country's doing from an evidence-based perspective. Call in and question everything on the next episode of Skeptically Speaking, broadcasting live every Friday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time here on CJSR.
South America does not exist. The moon is painted on the sky. Sometimes fall up, but you never see, and everything you believe is a lie.
Dinosaurs were invented by God as a test. Our bodies don't rot when we die. All the hippies are working for the government, and everything you believe is a lie.
Lie, 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 lie.
get married.
I'm dating your sister, and everything you believe is a lie.